All right, guys, we're going to start. Okay, so I always find the topic of Tamei HaMitzvot quite intriguing, giving reasons for mitzvot, and we're going to explore it. I know the title focused on one thing, but we're really going to explore it from four different angles. Okay, so, and especially the interaction between Machshava and Halacha, because one could have thought that these are totally disparate spheres. Like, Tamei HaMitzvot is great for Machshava class, you just got in the afternoon, but it should have no impact on your morning, you know, Gemara and Halacha study, and I'm going to try to create a little bit more of an integrationist model here to begin with. Okay, so let's just start with one basic point, okay, which will relate to Tamei HaMitzvot in general and making it less speculative. Well, there is one easy way to make it less speculative, which is the fact that the Torah, in more cases than you realize, actually gives a rationale for mitzvot. So give me, guys, two mitzvot where the Torah says three, explicitly what the rationale is. One does not have to say, oh, here I am speculating away. Okay, Ian. Yeah, it's tzitzis, right? You don't have to say, oh, who knows what tzitzis could be about, right? The Torah says, Laman tizkru, right? It's supposed to remind you of mitzvot. So I think one could easily say, I could go about analyzing tzitzit, feeling pretty confident what tzitzit is meant to accomplish. The Torah says so. Donnie D. Yes, very good. Excellent example. In Sukkot, we're told, Laman yedu dorotechem, ki abba Sukkot, oshak t'ipnei Yisrael. So one might say that, oh, we're not so sure what arba minim are about. There one could say it's a bit more of a speculative endeavor. But the Sukkah part of Sukkot is clearly some kind of historical commemoration. So once again, one would not need any speculation. Again, we still could wonder, does that affect the halacha? But I think if it did affect the halacha, one would not feel I'm groping in the dark. Right? The Torah is as explicit as you could want. No, fine. The former yeshiva historian.
It might be too indirect, but Shabbat.
Yes, why is it too indirect? Right. In Shabbat, it says very clearly, it is Zecher L'maaseh Breishit, and Zecher L'tzei Mitzrayim. Now, obviously, the Zecher L'maaseh Breishit is more intuitive than the Zecher L'tzei Mitzrayim, and many have written about why Shabbat would remind you of Egypt, but clearly that is at least one of the functions of Shabbat. Yeah? I was hoping someone would say that, because I wanted to differentiate. Okay, because JJ knows something, but I believe his knowledge might be getting in the way here. Okay, both in Kibbut Aveim and Shiluach HaKan, the Psukim famously say, Luman Yarichun Yamecha. Okay, but why am I absolutely not counting that, guys? I'm claiming that's an incentive, but not a rationale, right? That's not why there's a mitzvah Kibbut Aveim. That is an incentive to keep Kibbut Aveim. So I'm going to leave incentives out of it for now. Okay, because incentives don't necessarily tell you what the mitzvah is trying to accomplish. But that being said, we certainly have enough examples where the Torah does tell you. Elisha.
How many derises do we have a rationale for that's not a, like, zecher or, like, a knowledge-based rationale?
That's a good question. What about certain Avodah Zarah ones? You're saying don't act like the nations of the world act. Right, right.
Well, just the rationale is because you don't want
to
act like
you'd have to have
or like, because you should know that God is the only God or something like that. Right?
That's well, that's the problem, though, because if you translate Zecher too broadly, it's easy to see everything's a Zecher.
Right. Well, I don't know. So one of them was a Yedu.
No, it's true. The examples we said were more Zecher oriented. But I wouldn't say all of them, but you know, I never made an official list. That would be a good thing to do, make an official list. Yes?
I would say that, like, in terms of, like, the top eight at Torah, I feel like a lot of them have, like, very similar themes, like for, like, members of Sabbath Shrine, or mm-hmm. something like Breishit, or I'm sure there are other themes, but I feel like the time we spoke at are given later on by Rishonim and by later mm-hmm. thinkers are much more vast. I think it's much more comprehensive, the reasons
okay.
that we're trying to give. A Torah, a lot about Sabbath Shrine.
Yes, you're saying something similar to Elisha, that a lot of focus is certain crucial historical events that are meant to be recommended.
Exactly.
Okay. Good. Yes, Yoni.
Are there any people you're aware of who, because of these word Laman with the incentive ones, try and argue that they're not actually incentives, they're actually things to do it? Like, they'll almost like, make you live a long life, right?
Oh, so yeah, okay, yeah, like a naturalistic reason of Shiva Chakan?
By mezuzah. Oh, keep it up to by mezuzah, the Ramath says that it's like,
you know what I mean? You can see more.
Yeah, it's a little bit hard for me to see why Shiva Chakan would naturalistically lead to leading a long life.
Kind of sending away the bird, right?
It's sending away, I guess those who understand, it's you send away the mother bird when you take the young. Okay.
If you take care of your parents, like there's a structure that your kids will take care of you, and those will.
Right, right. I think that's what Yoni was hinting at.
Well, not only that, you'll have less stress in your life, which will be good.
No, it's okay, and you're less likely to attack the birds.
Yeah, honest weights and measures. Yeah. Okay, here's something that people don't know. This, if you want to like impress your friends at the next cocktail party, everyone says there are two mitzvot with the Torah promises long life. The reality is there are three. Okay, it is kibud av v'aim, shiluach hakan, and honest weights and measures. Okay, no one knows that one for some reason. But oh, actually, I think I know why no one knows that. People probably know the first two because of the Elisha ben Avuya story. Right, yeah. Everyone in this? Mm-hmm. Right, the Elisha ben Avuya, there's various reasons why he went off the derech. So one reason is he saw a fellow whose parents asked him to go get the bird. So he's simultaneously doing kibud av v'aim and shiluach hakan. Then he falls off the ladder and dies. Okay, so that made him lose his faith. So maybe that's why everyone knows those two, but there is a third. Yeah, are you? Why didn't they know the third one then? Do a survey of Jews on the Rutgers campus. You know, you're reminded of? There was one year in Lindenbaum, I was looking for someone to know the pasuk, eight lehov, eight lesno. Right, and nobody knew except one girl. So one girl raised her hand and says, it's from Kohelet. Yeah. So I said, how'd you know that? She goes, we read it every year. So I said, that somehow didn't work for anybody else in the room. Okay, good. Okay, so that's category one. Okay, so just realize that there are a lot of times where there are reasons in the Torah. Okay, now let's go to category two. I will argue, before we get to how to make it less speculative, just that sometimes, even in a lumdish year, some of you have heard this from me, but not so many people in the room, I think, that the lumdish is itself a machshava chakira. Okay, like, what is the mitzvah all about? So I have a few good examples. Let's start with one, actually, some of you haven't heard from me, or at least not this year. Okay, there is a mitzvah, the last mitzvah in the Torah is? To write a Sefer Torah. Okay, the Rush says, how do we fulfill this today? Famous Rush?
By producing books,
or buying books. Okay, now, wait, that's pretty radical. If the mitzvah is to write a Sefer Torah, how come today I walk into, you know, Manny's and buy a Chidushi HaRitva and I fulfilled the mitzvah? So what's the Rush's assumption based on, guys? That what was this mitzvah always meant in promoting? Is promoting Talmud Torah. So when Torah Sheval Peh was written down, right, the physical object that enabled Talmud Torah was a Torah scroll. People would perhaps use Torah scrolls not just for Kriyat HaTorah, but even for our Talmud Torah, right? The only person in the world who does this today is Rav Reim HaKohen from Aniel. Okay, I don't know if you've ever been there for Shabbat, but it's quite an experience in many ways. One way is, I believe on Friday night, I think, when he gives the Sicha, right, he takes out the Sefer Torah, opens it up, and comments based on the Torah scrolls. I hope not. if Rav Reim does it, it's probably okay. Okay? I'm sorry? Have you been there, Judah?
All the things that are all there for.
Okay. Well, Judah, you want to have like a 17-part halachic critique of it on the hill? Okay. Okay, so you guys feel it for Shabbos just in general. It's very interesting, Judah. Okay, but in any case, but we don't do Talmud Torah from scrolls anymore. How do we promote Talmud Torah? By having Sfar. So, but notice what the Rush is doing here, right? He's assuming a rationale for the mitzvah and actually making a halakha conclusion based on that rationale. So that's a pretty big deal. Because someone else could have said that. How do you know that's what it's about? Who says it's about Talmud Torah? Maybe it's just the presence of the Sefer Torah. We just want Sefer Torahs around as a symbol. Right? You could have said something else. And in fact, it's very interesting. Some Achronim, you'll see if some Machlokas guys look this up. Some Achronim were very uncomfortable with the Rush. So they said, you know what you should do? The Rush is only like an added chumrah. Meaning it's not that you no longer have to write a Sefer Torah, but write the Torah plus also by the Rashba, right? Because they're comfortable, like those are Achronim, we're currently using the reason to increase the load, but not using the reason to lower the load, to lighten the load. But realize some Achronim really said, no, you don't have to bend bright a Sefer Torah anymore. You have to, you know, produce Svar.
What do you think the Rush meant?
Okay, I actually think he meant the latter. Okay. One other thing is not crucial, just is one of my favorite questions in Shir Kol ever. And it's even better because it was by the youngest Traum. And you can tell him he got quoted here. And I think it's the only time he spoke up all year. So it was really like a brilliant move. Like, only make one comment all year, and it's a great comment. Yeah, he really was very smart. After he made that comment, that was it. He stopped. Okay, so he asked me the following. He said, what if you buy a second-hand safer? Which is an extremely clever question if you think about it. Because what's the argument? Obviously, if I write a book, there's now one more Sefer to learn from in the world, if I write a Sefer Torah. And if I buy a Rashba, you could still say that because, well, when the company gets sold out, they'll print more, right? So arguably buying a Rashba means there are more Svarim in the world. But you could argue when you buy a secondhand book, it does not produce any more Torah learning in the world, right? That book always existed and now just transferred hands from its previous owner to you. I thought it was an extremely clever question. And then Ari Tartarka, who always reads weird things in his spare time, said that some countries don't count in the gross national product secondhand buying. Because apparently it's like, it's a question, does that really stimulate the economy or not? So I thought that was quite fascinating. Yeah, Donnie D.
But even if you think that, like, it's still sitting in a used bookstore. Like, there's not more Talmud Torah in the world because this book's sitting in a used bookstore. Unless, say, somebody else is going to buy it.
Yeah, I can hear that. Maybe somebody else will buy it.
But it's just...
Yeah, what do you think?
Circulating inventory. It's not adding it.
All right, I'm not saying like you can't answer his question positively, but I thought it was a very, very fascinating question. Yeah.
But I don't think it's hard to, comparison is fair. Because, yes, I'm tracking the economy, yes, it's my certain thing, it's fine. But yeah, you're telling that if a book is cutting dust on a bookshelf...
Okay, fair enough.
Remember, the mitzvah is not to learn Torah. The mitzvah is to produce more works of Torah in one way or another.
You could say, if it would have stayed on the bookshelf for 2 years and I buy it, so then there's more Talmud Torah in the world.
Yeah, but again, the mitzvah is not to learn Torah.
Okay.
It's also because the category just encompasses too many different scenarios.
Right.
You can't really...
Okay, but again, guys, it doesn't happen so often that somebody asks like a totally left-field question that's really intriguing, so... That's going to stay in my memory forever. Yeah.
Isn't there another assumption of the Rosh that it's not just Tanakh and that if you're making something on, like, producing a book about, like, Talmud?
Yeah. But again, the Rosh assumed this was just about there should be more Lima Torah in the world. Right. More access to Lima Torah. Not necessarily Chumash.
Yeah, but that definition meaning surpasses Chumash.
Yes. See, we still believe in a right to that Nach is Talmud Torah. Okay?
What about Breslin?
Okay.
If I buy a Rush, did I fulfill the message?
Oh, try to get met on us. Okay, good. So that's example number one. Okay, example number two. Actually, let's go with Shiluach HaKan. Shiluach HaKan is a good example, and maybe it'll get to the speculative point also. So far I said, well, obviously it's less speculative if the Torah says the reason explicitly. What have you said, guys? I know that many of you might not love this, but is it like sometimes it just seems intuitively obvious what the reason is, especially when it's in the realm of ethics and compassion? Because I think it might be easier there. Because if it's the realm of Beram Lamukko, you might say we don't really have such clear analogs outside the tradition. Like you can't say, oh, kashrut, it's just like X and Y. You know, it's not so clear what kashrut is just like. Okay, but you might say, you know, Judaism is not the only group in the world that has kibud of aim. Let's do kibud aim for a second. Let's say, I'm not saying this is obviously the reason, but let's say you're trying to figure out a rationale for kibud of aim. I don't think most of this room would struggle endlessly. Okay, and even if we leave out lamanya and yichun yamecha, what would most of us say?
It's
gratitude. Right? Gratitude is a basic human ethical intuition. Your parents brought you into this world. They raised you and cared for you for X amount of years. So you should be mechabed them. Right? So I admit, I cannot point to any pasuk in the Torah where the Torah says, this is the rationale for kibud av aim. But I do not think one is going on a limb to say, this is the rationale.
There are like ethicists that would struggle to validate gratitude as an ethical value. Though.
That's correct. There are ethicists that would struggle for every value. Okay. So now, what about Shiluach HaKan? So again, I think most of us would say, we do not have to be, you know, Einstein to figure this out. If you're sending the mother a bird away when you take the young, presumably what are you doing? Having some compassion on the mother bird. Right? It's about teaching you the truth. Right? And you could say it two ways, guys. This is a Rambam debate, by the way. Right? Is it who's the animal lover in the room? Well, who's a vegetarian? Okay, there we go. Alicia, this is for you. Okay? So you could say I'm having direct compassion on the bird, on the mother bird. That's the Rambam. Or you could say the Ramban, maybe I'm not so careful about the bird's pain, but this will teach me to be compassionate in the human sphere, right? Still training me in compassion. Okay, one second. But here's where things get really interesting, guys. Okay, what about the following scenario? Here's, again, I'm going to try to show, I once wrote an article about this, by the way, to try to show that Talmud mitzvahs are not separate from halachic reasoning. Okay, here we go. I, all my life, have wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. I feel like I've done, even this is not true, 612 out of 613 mitzvot. I'm just missing a good Shiluach HaKan opportunity. And then I'm walking in the forest, and I find a mother bird sitting on her eggs. It is very exciting. And I'm not interested in the young at all. But I say, here's my opportunity, Nushalach HaKohen. So I send the mother away and take the eggs. Right, I feel great because I fulfilled the 613 mitzvah. Okay, does that make sense to you guys or not? Okay, so the Chavot Yair says you're not supposed to do the mitzvah in that scenario. Because you have compassion for the mother bird when you want to use the young. If you don't want to use the young, this is not a place for expressing compassion.
But you
okay, wait, is it the Chavot Yair or the Chavot Yair? 1 second. I don't remember who's who.
Who's the Chavot Yair?
I don't remember who's who.
Not wanting to actually do it.
Yeah. One second, guys. Let me. I might have mixed up my chet achronim.
No, because that could be causing a despair to the mother. It would need the eggs. You're just doing it for the sake of.
Well, first of all, I think you guys are belittling the value of doing a mitzvah. A, like that's a big deal to do a mitzvah. A, and B,
I feel like the mitzvah is in a case. It's like kind of like when you go to war. Like you don't go to war for a country just so you could like do like
okay, guys, I got it backwards. Sorry, the Chassam Sofer is the one who says it does not apply. Okay, Chassam Sofer is the one who says it does not apply. But listen to this. The Chavot Yair says it does apply. Now, here's where things get really interesting. You could have told me that what's our split here? The Chatam Sofer is willing to bring the Tam into play. Halachically, he says if the Tam is compassion, if I don't want the young, then there's no mitzvah. Everyone good with that so far? That's the Chatam Sofer. What does the Chavot Yair think? We don't know what the reason is. Don't bring the reason into play, and therefore the mitzvah is still there. But listen to this, guys. That is not what the Chavot Yair says. He wants to look it up. It's Chavot Yair Samach Zayin. Rav Yair Bachrach. He was important early Achron who wrote Tshuva in like the 1600s. Rav Yair Bachrach. Well, his most famous Tshuva has to do with women saying Kaddish. So those guys, women's issues. Can you know that one, Gabe?
Rav Weider gave a share about it in stone.
Okay. There you go. I thought Rav David had given it. I guess Rav David does not cover every women's issue. Okay. What? Rav David. Ah, there you go. Okay, so 1 second, Joey. So listen to this, guys. He says I should do it anyway. V'hachi mistaver. Now, I thought there was going to be, because we don't know the rationale. L'tam shekata b'zohar. This fits the rationale for the mitzvah in the Zohar. Shukade sha'of eim ha'ofot titzta'er. We want the mother to be pained. V'tifrach mimakom l'makom l'vakeshet baneah. Right, it's almost totally counterintuitive. It'll fly around looking for her young, vayidekach yidgalglu rachme hamakom baruchu al banav shebegalut. Okay, so what is he saying? Again, for me intuitively, this is not the reason for the mitzvah. But notice what he's saying. He's saying that according to the Zohar, it's actually the opposite. We want God to see, look, there is a mother in pain looking for her children. That is the fate of Am Yisrael in the galut. And therefore, God should be inspired to bring us out of the galut. So whether you find that convincing or not, something fascinating just happened. What is the Chavos Yair actually doing, in some sense? Not saying that the rationale doesn't matter, but it's a different rationale. And the different rationale plays out differently. So notice, just like in Ketivat Sefer Torah, here in Shiluach HaKohen, in theory, the rationale is impacting the halacha of the mitzvah. Yeah.
Rather than rationale, it's also the nature of the mitzvah. If you compare it to, like, I don't know, like, get, like, really not what you should do with get if you are trying to do the worst way. Like,
okay.
So similarly, like, in the case where you're interested in eggs, and you want to eat egg, whatever it is, then you're not obligated to shoot off the fish.
Okay.
Does that fall into the category of time mitzvah, or is that...
Look, you could say those who don't want to bring Tommy Mitzvah would probably try to use your formulation. Right, but I would say sometimes when we're trying to figure out the nature of the mitzvah, is the Tom that enables us to figure out the nature. Right. I mean, you're kind of saying, we already know the nature, and if we don't need the Tom to get there. We know that there's a context-based mitzvah. Right? You have to look at the psukim basically, to see if you feel like it's a context-based mitzvah.
What's the backlash of including Tommy Mitzvah? That otherwise, you're not going to do what it doesn't apply?
Look, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a tremendous fear. People say that, if I give a rationale, so I'll explain that the rationale doesn't apply in this scenario. Right. Which is a reasonable fear. Like, people would say, if you tell me that kosher is about self-control, so if I'm a vegan, I already express self-control, so why do I have to worry about kosher?
Right, so the other side of that is just to infuse the meaning and this
one. Or, very good, Joey. Or they would say, well, there's two ways to do it. One is to say, I refuse to do it at all, which I would be pretty strongly against. Or I'll do it, but I'll never do it with any halachic impact. Then I will have this strong break between philosophy class and Gemara halacha. In philosophy class, I talk about reasons. In Gemara halacha, I never do. Which I'm trying to argue against that also. Okay, yeah, Rafi.
I think you just make this like a similar split in the like psychosomatic practice reason, like the pure kadash. If you're saying I'm trying to do it to build a habit of actually kibbutzing, I don't care if I'm actually doing kibbutzing. So then even if I'm going out of my way to do it, then it would apply. And if it's pure kibbutzing, then...
I think even according to Ramban, would it really train me in compassion if I wasn't interested in the young to begin with? Like, I'm just...
Well, you do it as, like, a habit. Of, like,
interesting.
Doing
okay.
Yeah,
leave.
Doing it as a practice,
I think
it's really
coming to a lot of conclusions based on Timos also comes with the assumption that, like, our categories of reason are somehow able to interpret divine will, you know? Like, that's very medieval idea. The idea that that we have reasons and that we're able to interpret the divine will through those reasons. Like, especially like, where's Quincy?
Don't look for postmodern help from Quincy. Stick to your work.
you can
do it yourself.
in a postmodern age, the idea that like our faculties of reason are enough to interpret divine will. Like, I just don't know if that's true.
Okay, let me make 2 points. Point number one is.
Okay. That's why I need a cookie stone.
Okay. Point number one is one doesn't have to be a philosopher to say that the system is relying on human reason. Let us say I am super brisker. I don't have that philosophic thought in my body. I just do Gemara Chakiras all day. What faculty are you using in your Gemara Chakiras? You're using human reason. Right? When you get up and say, I don't know, So Rav Gavshi, you guys, we should go over there. When I rely on a chazaka to resolve a debate, is that actually mevarer the suffix, or is it just a way of functioning, but we still really have a suffix? Is that not human reasoning?
But these are at least categories defined by Chazal, which we believe in a sense to be divine. It's the oral Torah, which we believe to come.
Wait, you think the Briskers?
Aspect.
Briskers didn't invent any categories that don't appear in the Gemara?
They probably did. Yeah. I'm saying something like a chazaka, something we find in the Gemara.
Correct. But all I would say is that whether you like it or not, I love it, but you could dislike it. But I think the entire structure of Torah Shabbat Peh gives a certain faith in human reasoning, whether I'm a philosopher or a lamdan, right? It doesn't matter, right? We are assuming that human thinking can be productive, can work out conclusions, right? I think all of Torah Shabbat Peh assumes that.
Do you think, I guess, we're making cookie, like? Do you think you can make a fakir, but behind, like, you see what the divine will imparts, you try to, like, break that down into categories of the what, but, like, and that's breaking it down, like, on the surface, but then there's the other category of, like, getting behind it, like, seeing what's
Look,
behind, and, like, you can't really get behind the divine will. It's not something that's available
fine.
To you, necessarily. The mitzvah's there, it's available
okay.
to you, what's behind it.
It is truly, to make you happy. Let me just make a second before I answer this, your follow-up question. Secondly, even in our postmodern world, I don't really believe that we have fully punted human reason.
Yeah,
I think, as people have said, no one really lives in a world where we have fully punted human reason.
I think there's a general idea that, like, it's hard to really get to the bottom. Like, it's bottomless. Like, if you're really trying to break something down, like, not even break it down, but, like, kind of dig into it and get to the bottom of it, the bottom of it's going to be bottomless.
Okay.
Whereas, like, I'm taking this mitzvah and I'm breaking it down right in front of me as opposed to trying to get behind it.
I'll get to that in a second, just to make fun of you. Leave, you have to put down your David Foster Wallace and pick up your Jonathan Franzen. That is my advice for you, okay? You're reading the wrong novels. Okay, so... guys, you didn't understand the reference, it's okay. Life will go on. Okay, so...
They're very close colleagues.
What?
They're very close friends, actually.
Okay.
Brandon has some articles about him in New York, not David Foster Wallace.
Okay. Nevertheless, reading Infinite Jest is a infinitely different experience than reading what's it called? Freedom. Okay, but here's what I wanted to say. Just to be fair to Leave, some briskers use the exact terminology Leave just used. They'll say, what do we do in Judaism? We are interested in the what and not in the why. And they even have this not metaphor, but parallel to, like, they say, this is the way a scientist works. Like, what does a scientist do? You're given a bunch of facts, right? The empirical world gives you a bunch of facts. And what do you want? You want a theory that explains that fact, right? So, what if we have a bunch of facts? And gravity will explain the world works, how it does, okay? But then if you ask, why is there gravity? The scientist would legitimately say, I have no idea. Go ask some theologian or some philosopher. We don't ask those questions. We just come up with a theory that explains the facts. Now, I freely admit that that's the way science works. The question is that a good analogy to a halachic analysis? Okay, but a classic, you know, non-philosophic Prisker will say that. We have halachic data, right? The Gemara is our data. What are we trying to do? Any theory that explains the data is good enough. We don't have to ask any why questions at all. Okay, so if you guys want to read more about this, there's a lot of interesting reading. Okay, it's even interesting a split between the older Rav Lichtenstein and the younger Rav Lichtenstein. Okay, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was more in the former camp. Okay, even though he was certainly capable of doing philosophy, it never entered Gemara Shir. And then Rav Moshe Lichtenstein wrote a very well-known article about why Brisker should start asking why questions. Okay, it was in the Torah Mata Journal. If you can't find it, let me know. I'll forward it to me. Wait, are you guys all in one alumni? Or every year is different. You're not all in one alumni WhatsApp group, right?
There's an alumni here.
Oh, there is one alumni here right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's also the Shir slash Tizit.
Okay, so Gabe, can you send me this article?
Should I send you a response also?
Wait, which response?
To what risk I brought?
When did I have a response? I wrote a separate article.
Oh, was that not a response?
Just send his article away.
No. Okay. So in any case, you guys are curious. Again, you don't have to read it, but it's quite interesting that this move. Okay, any other comments on that? Yeah, Donnie.
How can we say there's ever a case where there's a direct mitzvah that you have the opportunity to do and you're not supposed to do?
No. Well, according to the Rush, it's not that you're not... Oh. Well... Well, Donnie, let's go with Joey's excellent example. Okay, Donnie, can I reduce you to absurdity, a little reductio ad absurdum? But you could say enochanami if you want. Okay, ready? Will you one day say, I must divorce my wife because otherwise I will never fulfill the mitzvah of gerushin?
Yeah, that's totally
okay, an honest man. Are you?
Just elaborate. Just elaborate on the Russian point because that's more of an enochanami. Yeah. Even when it comes to pure post and Shas and Shuvos, which is less than, I guess, what Mr. Forte, I still think that the vibe of how to think about what, like, I completely agree with that, but if you say that Torah Shabbat, it's not human ingenuity and thinking, you can still have that divide of what are we thinking about? Are we thinking inside the framework, outside the framework? And so inside the framework, we can be incredibly creative, so we have to create the cloth, and we are incredibly creative. But it's still within a framework of what have you been given directly? And
no, that's fine. I didn't mean to be too negative to the Briskers. You could live with Lee's distinction. I mean, I happen to be against it, but you could live with it. But I would say, in terms of Lee's first question, no one is really denying human reason.
My point is, I think human reason can have an incredibly massive role in creating Norman Falaha and Charles Jumas without saying we're able to have to recognize and create new reason.
Okay, good. Guys, I'll take more comments in 1 second because I want to do one more example and then sneak in two more categories before Mincha. Okay, last example. Some of you heard this read this last week. There's a mitzvah to eat an Erev Yom Kippur. There's a famous debate what the mitzvah is all about. Some of Farshim say the mitzvah is to prepare for the fast. There's a beautiful Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Yom Kippur is a chag. Every chag should have a festive meal. Oh, now we've got a problem because how can you make it a fast and a festive meal? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, I've got a great solution. Move the festive meal to Erev Yom Kippur. So notice the difference, right? This is a lumdish chakira. Is it not at the same level, kind of a tamia mitzvah chakira? Right? Is the meal on Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur, about preparing for the fast? Or is it about celebrating, as it were, Yom Kippur? And as I asked you guys last week, you guys got the nafkamina right away. What if someone whose doctor says, given your medical condition, you can't fast on Yom Kippur? So if the whole purpose of eating was to prepare, it should fall away, right? It has no purpose anymore, right? But if it was to celebrate, as it were, Yom Kippur, so who cares if the doctor told me to break it? Yom Kippur is still a holy day for me, and the mitzvah would still apply. So just to sum up my second category, I'm trying to do three places where the time impacts on how I apply the mitzvah. Okay, again, the three examples were writing a Sefer Torah, according to the Rush, Shiluach HaKan, where we had the Chavot Yer and the Chatam Sofer, and eating on Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur, based on Rabbeinu Yonah, versus the other reason. Okay, now we get to something great. Okay, next category. Okay, so this, I want to give credit to who did it. So Rabbi Meir Twersky from YU, I don't know if you guys have interacted with him so much. So he has an article in Tradition in 2003, where he talks about an interesting thing in the Sefer HaChinuch. Okay, that the Sefer HaChinuch will often say, now again, this is not to be makel, in terms of like what Donnie did just before, but he will often say, one advantage of thinking about reasons for mitzvot is that I'll apply, then I have values that I could apply outside of the mitzvah. So again, guys, it's not that I'm poskining anything. It is just that I am extracting a value and taking it elsewhere. So I'm going to give you a couple of them. Here's like 6-7 examples. And it's always in the Sefer HaChinuch. Now, by the way, guys, do you think it's an accident that it's in the Sefer HaChinuch? Why is it not an accident? Well, one of the Sefer HaChinuch's main jobs is to give Tamei Mitzvot. So he clearly thought this mattered. What? What makes you think it was very controversial? Okay, I would like to see that because I'm not aware of anybody who wrote a tirade against the Sefer HaChinuch. I can think of tirades against the Mishnah Torah and the Morning Bukhim and even the Shulchan Aruch, but I'm not aware of any tirades against the Sefer HaChinuch.
Maybe that's why it was anonymous.
Oh, there you go. Oh, he's protecting himself. Okay, very clever move on the Sefer HaChinuch's part. Okay. It was produced anonymously?
The Mishnah Torah, I think, at first was anonymous.
Really? Are you sure?
I think one was.
Okay, well, please find that out for me, because I'm not aware of that either. Okay, I've got all kinds of interesting quotes here. Wait. Oh, I just thought you were like reaching for the article. I wasn't sure how you were going to prove it. From the okay, here we go, guys. So, this is a great example. There's a mitzvah you probably never heard of, that when your Eved Evri goes free, Hanek Tanek Lo. I don't know what you're supposed to do. Are you Bishrankin? It's a Pasuk in Chumash. What do you think? A parting gift. Just give him a parting gift. Okay, that he shouldn't like be starting from scratch. He'll have a nice amount of money. Okay, I don't know exactly what the parameters of the gift is. But that's called Hanek Tanek Lo. Give him a manak. Give him some kind of parting gift. Okay. Okay. Okay, so now, let's think for a second, guys. What could someone easily say? Too bad. Now that we live in a world which has no avdut, there's a mitzvah that we just never have any connection to. Right, so at that point, this mitzvah is a theoretically nice idea that ceases to have any impact on our lives. Guys, what would you imagine the Sefer HaChinuch might say?
Well, Yonah? Fire someone.
Exactly. Okay, Yonah? Yeah, surely someone who worked for the company for 20 years deserves some kind of nice gift when they leave. That's a sense of gratitude, good relationship. And I think it often happens that people have tremendous resentment when it's not true. Right? But I don't know if it's happened to any of your parents or grandparents. Oh, I worked for that company for 30 years and they gave me, a nice card signed by all the workers when I left. Right? That is what I got. Okay. What?
There's a little controversy on Twitter because I know a lot of employees that
wow. No, but isn't it a little different? Isn't severance pay a legal obligation?
Yeah.
I'm saying it's not like a nice.
I mean, isn't this a legal obligation?
So that's an interesting question, guys. I'm curious if anyone reads the article, tell me what you think. Because, right? So again, what does the Sefer HaChinuch say? And we should learn from this rationale that when someone's worked for you for a long time, you should give him a nice gift when he leaves. But Alicia's asking a very interesting question. Is that like a concrete chiyuv or just some value that I learned from?
No, even the Eved Evri is like a concrete chiyuv.
Yeah, no, that's just the mitzvah of the Torah.
Works. Okay, so yeah, it still works.
No,
so
what do you mean it still works?
Like, it still fulfills the concept of showing gratitude to your service.
Okay.
Similar to the severance package, even though it's a
concrete chiyuv. Oh, yeah. No, I was just curious how he was able to get away with it. That's my question.
It could be an eighth sense of an actual chiyuv.
I don't know what I mean.
No, but counsel advice. No, at least you're right. I wasn't asking Yoni that undermines the idea. I was just curious how he could get away with it if it's. I mean, they could just take him to court and.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess I
Okay. Okay, let me switch one second, guys. But, right, guys, if you. And let me know what you think if you're convinced. Right, Tversky is convinced that it's an actual concrete chiyuv. Okay, he tries to derive that from the language of the chinuch. Okay, I'm not sure I'm fully convinced, but I just read over the article this morning, so I'm still thinking about it. Okay, just a second example. There's also a beautiful example. Okay, sorry, go back to slavery, just slavery works very well for these kind of things. You're not supposed to work your Eved Ivri, what's called Avodat Parech. What's Avodat Parech? Somehow backbreaking work. No, JJ is right. That's what it means literally. Although Chazal sometimes interpreted psychologically, which always is even more interesting. And you remember some of the psychological interpretations? Yeah, Leif?
It's like give him busy work that he needs to do.
Very good. This I just find fascinating. Chazal were really onto something psychologically here, guys. Anybody, it doesn't matter what your work situation is, you want to feel like you actually produce something of worth, of value. The worst thing, but you even see this in the army. I'll give you a good army story. Okay, this is the army. Well, I don't have my own. I have to use my kids. Okay, so. Okay, what? It's.
Get the guitar out.
Okay. Let's not get carried away.
Okay. Is there a Shonim or Chazal?
I think it's in Chazal already. I think, don't Chazal talk about, like, you ask him in the morning to take the rocks from the right to the left side of the street, and then the afternoon bring the rocks back, which obviously is not a productive endeavor. Okay, yes. So I was talking to my brother on Friday. So our oldest two sons were in Shmona Matayim, which is like the more elite intelligence unit, and our third son is in the regular army. And we discovered that it's not the same army in the slightest. Like, the third son has to put up with much more garbage than the older two. Like, my oldest son was basically said, here's a computer, do your thing, and we'll talk to you in a couple of years. Right? No one's checking if he shaved, if he, you know, has his dog tag. Like, those things just don't happen with him. Okay? So we realized that the Netzadok is in a different army than Zechariah and Mordechai. And he's, let's just say he's not too thrilled with it. Okay? So my brother said to me, my older brother, the one from Cleveland. So my brother said to me, well, shouldn't that be for a lot of the army? Like, most of the army's not in Shemona Matayim. So I was thinking about it, and I said, I think if you're in an elite intelligence unit, you definitely feel like you're doing something for the army. If you're combat, you also feel like you're protecting Am Yisrael. Right? You with me so far? So at that point, I think you want to put up a certain amount of garbage because I'm doing something of real worth. But what if you have a non-combat job that isn't so intellectually stimulating? Right? Let's say there are a lot of jobs that work. My son is, he helps people fix their computers. Okay, but they're worse jobs. What if you're like, you know, piling papers in office or making lists in an office? Now, it's true that the army needs somebody to make lists in the office too. But you probably don't go home every night feeling, oh, I saved Am Yisrael today. I made a list in the office. Right? So I think at that point, those are the people who are most frustrated by life in the army. I'm just using an example where, like, if you feel you're contributing, you could put up with a certain amount of bureaucratic stupidity. If you feel like you're not making a great contribution, then I think you're just going to be frustrated a lot. So I think Chazal were really onto something. That's it. This is my one army story. Okay, so that's not true. Actually, I have three. But they're all involving my kids. Okay, but I think that Chazal were onto something about Avodat Parah. Give me 1 second. So let's just think for a second, guys. Okay, what's the Chinuch going to say, obviously? So instead of saying, well, we don't have slaves anymore, and therefore this mitzvah has no relevance, what would you say? Yeah, surely in our, even in, you know, Western modernity, 21st century, a lot of bosses are mistreating their employees, right? That has not gone out of style, right? You do not need slavery to, right? You could ask Noah Fine over here about his summer internship, okay? You do not, wait, you mistreated?
No.
Forget that. Okay. Okay, fine. Forget that. Don't ask him. Okay, but I think many people have experiences where, like, your boss mistreats you. Whatever the case may be, they ask for extra hours and don't pay you.
Could ask you a lot
about Elon, were you mistreated? You mistreated a boss? You mistreated by a boss?
No.
No, not at all?
Ask him about being mashgiach at UMB.
Okay. So the Chinuch says, very well, right, even in a world without slavery, we would still have responsibility about how we treat our workers. And again, we can ask the same question Alicia has before. Does he think it's a chiyuv, it's just a nice idea? Be that as it may, though, this is my third category, right? I'll summarize it all at the end. Using the value to apply beyond the parameters of the mitzvah. Mark.
Can you fulfill a mitzvah if it's mandated by law? Let's say that.
Wait, aren't all mitzvahs like that?
No. I'm saying like the law forces you to give a severance package, or let's say.
Yeah, I think so. I think it wouldn't change it. Okay, Donnie. Donnie, so you like this topic? It's the fourth time. There's more than you ever spoke of.
I'm just trying to jump in.
There's more than you spoke of in any shiur I gave in yeshiva. Fourth time already.
But doesn't this logic kind of also assume that busy work is subjective as opposed to objective? Like, if somebody needs to make the list, and you feel like garbage doing it, but, like, still not.
No, you're right. I didn't mean to fault the army for. You're right. What if the end of the day we need that list? Okay, but it's curious. Do any of you have friends who have jobs like that in the army? No?
I've
Oh, you gave in? Yeah.
My cousin.
Oh, yeah. How did they deal with it?
Gosh. You just
really
was counting the days.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you can ask your cousin, right? The people who are counting the days then, they're the ones filing lists in the office. Okay, Gabe, who do you have?
My friend Fana, she's the canine unit, and for 3 months I had to just pick up the boot.
Oh, no.
Wait, I thought the canine was exciting. Like, you train dogs to, like, sniff out explosives.
There's an exciting part and a not exciting part. She was the cleaning crew for 3 months. You have to switch off.
Oh, my God. I never realized that the canine unit also those that just clean up poop. That's worse than they make you listen to the office. Oh, my God. So, yeah, Donnie, I wasn't trying to use it to fault the army. And I don't mean the army violated a voter park. You're right. Someone has to do it. All I just meant was that I wanted to use that to show the psychological need to feel like your work is meaningful. I was only using it for that purpose.
I find that kind of funny because, like, I find that Israelis are way less mocky about picking up dog poop.
than Americans. You find dog poop on the street.
No, I'm disagreeing.
I'm not doing it. I'm sorry to do this, Lee. You might be revealing that you live in Englewood, New Jersey. Yes, J.J. Blinken. Wait, did you also live in Englewood, though?
No, I was with
Okay, Mark Atherweem. All the New Yorkers here are denying your claim.
Suburban Americans versus.
Yeah, but I would say correct. In wealthy suburban America, maybe there's indoor people over the place. But that's a small part of America. Yeah, Gabe.
So the idea that you're using kind of like the same person is using the value to apply beyond the parameters of the mixed off, A, how does that work with like Kadoshim to you?
Oh, very interesting. He has a footnote here. Gabe Gross, excellent. Gabe Gross, guys, no one knew he was going to become a philosophy star while in Yeshiva, but then he did. Amazing. Okay, he has a footnote about how the Ramban would differ from the Chinuch. Is it the same concept? Look at, well, there aren't that many footnotes.
I sent it into that.
There are 13 footnotes, but look in footnote 3. Okay, check out footnote 3 here. Okay.
Is it footnote
4? It's not as exciting as footnote 4 philosophy, man. As modern Orthodox still has an advantage, we're the only movement that has its own footnote. Conservative movement and Haredim, they're still looking for a footnote.
And that also is it kind of that, like, kind of also the article that you sent me about Lashon Hara and, like, the extent that, like, mm-hmm. something becomes totally halakhic.
Oh, that's a great question. I can't deal with it because I'm going to speak to you in the last 4 minutes. Okay. Excellent question. Okay, guys, just to review with the three guys I've had so far. First of all, I just pointed out the Torah itself gives reasons. So they wouldn't have to worry about speculation. Two, I've pointed out cases where the halachic analysis seems to involve reasons, like writing a Torah. And thirdly, I point out the chinuch, which is we're not changing the halacha, but we're taking values from the halacha and applying it beyond. Okay, now for the last category. Okay, how can we make it less speculative? So this is something I'm really wondering about and working on for years, which is maybe we could do what we said before, take the data of the mitzvah, but not only derive halakhic conclusions, but use the data to say which rationale is more convincing. So I'm just going to give you two examples of this. Okay, there is a mitzvah to give a kohen truma. And some of you have heard this year. The Rambam and Chinuch debate what the purpose is. The Rambam says it's to support the kohen, right? The kohen's busy doing his kohuna stuff. He won't have time to do his own business on the side. So we support him by giving him truma. The Chinuch says not at all. It is a symbolic gesture to say that our produce comes from God. And the Kohen is just a stand-in, because God is not going to take our grain and eat it. So we give it to the Kohen as God's representative. Okay, so you could say that's a very nice philosophy debate. No way to know who's right. Is it to support the Kohen, as the Rambam would have it, or is it the symbolic gesture as the Chinuch would have it? But then the Chinuch makes a very clever point. Okay, guys, if you're in my morning share, you're ineligible right now. Okay, on a biblical level, how much are you supposed to give to the Kohen? Biblical.
It could be a tiny.
It could be any amount. Any amount. Meaning, don't notice that truma is not referred to as a maser. Anything that's a maser has to be a tenth. A truma could be any amount. Who does that sound more like? The Chinuch or the Rambam? Doesn't that support the Chinuch? If I'm really trying to support the Kohen, so who says giving any amount will do a good job of supporting the collected body of Kohanim? But if it was more of a symbolic gesture to say that my produce comes from God, maybe at that point any amount could serve the purpose. So that might be an example where, oh, I can make it less speculative by using details to see which makes more sense. I'll try one more, guys. Okay, and then maybe we'll wrap it up, but please read the articles and send me more information. Give me one more. I need one more. Guys, basar b'chalav. It is very unclear why the Torah doesn't want you to mix meat and milk. That's one of the hardest things to figure out. And there, I would certainly not feel like I'm confident enough to make a halachic derivation in food in general. I feel very underconfident, like what kashrut is about, what basar b'chalav is about. Okay. But I will say one thing to favor the Rambam. The Rambam thinks, like classic Rambam, oil ablaze, that basar b'chalav is combating paganism. He thinks there was some kind of pagan practice involving mixing meat and milk. Now, I admit, guys, I feel sometimes that the Rambam overdoes it. It can't be that every aspect of Judaism is combating paganism.
We should run away from things.
There you go, Lisa. But however, I actually think there's a lot of detail here that supports Rambam. Can anyone think of what's an unusual detail of basar b'chalav that might support Rambam? Yoni Zerman's a clever guy. That's very clever. You got it right away. Guys, almost every forbidden food stuff in Judaism is asur ba'achila, not asur ba'hana. Right. If I mishecht an animal, I could just sell it to a non-Jewish slaughterhouse. right? If I have treif meat, I could sell it to my non-Jewish neighbor. I'm saying I have to sell it, but I could sell it. Most things that are asr to eat are not asr bana. All of a sudden, basar b'chalav is asr bana. You might even see people raise the question, oh, you know, Michael Broyd once wrote an article called, is it mutter for a Jew to have stock in McDonald's? Now, why do you ask about McDonald's and not beefsteak Charlie's for the sake of argument? Okay, because it's about basar b'chalav. So one of the issues is, am I getting hana from it even if I'm not eating it?
Are you allowed to?
Right? Read the article. The problem is, there's like four different, the problem is there's too many components. Beyond the question of like, is there hana, this question of how does Judaism view, how does halacha view having stock? Is that ownership? Is that hana? So you could find that article online too, but I have to admit that I don't remember any of the details. Okay, but did you read the article? Is that you know that?
I read it and I was disgusted. I think that he ends up, you're allowed to, because I think that his final thing.
Okay, is it more based on the stock thing or more based on.
You view yourself as owning the parts of the company that are not doing
okay. But in any case, but Yoni says something very clever, right? Where do we see Isser Hana in our world, in Halacha universe? Avodah Zarah type things tend to be Isser Hana. So I wouldn't say it's an absolute proof for Rambam. I'm not that convinced, but I do think it's suggestive. Wait, how come this Isser all of a sudden is Asar Bana? Maybe it expresses our total reluctance to have anything to do with Avodah Zarah. So guys, so that's my fourth category. Maybe sometimes the details could help us be less speculative, right? Give us like something to work off, to work on rationales. JJ, what did you say before? Oh, sorry. Okay, Donnie, your fifth comment. Donnie, you got to come back to bed for a second semester now, Donnie. Okay. Okay. Ah, very interesting. That was very interesting what it was just said. Okay. Yeah. That's why we sing Ashrei, so I can sneak in two more points. That's really cool. Okay. Now you just made it clever, Donnie. One of the guys, if anyone wants to go, you can go. One of the other theories is that it's somehow cruel. And you want to tell me that the phraseology of the pasuk sounds more like the cruelty?
Yeah.
Is that why? Because it doesn't say "lo tarsu mo" because that's a cruel thing. But you're saying is the mother imagery that's what's getting you?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Very good. So you say no. Look at the wording. The wording indicates cruelty. Yeah. Last comment. No, but how often do they say, based on this detail, it's more convincing? I think they just...
I don't think they're...
In my mind, most of them who do it just give a reason. They don't try to base it and root it in the details.
Rambam's always just like, if you're smart, you know.
Yeah. So guys, let me just set this.